Hello, Matt Elliott here.
Hi, Alan Smith here.
Hey guys, Ian Hume here.
Hi everybody, Jerry Taggart here.
Be sure to watch
Chris and Leicester Till I Die TV
for all the latest Leicester City news and information.
You can also subscribe on YouTube and various social media channels
for the latest updates and news on Leicester City Football Club.
Come on, you foxes!
Till I Die TV, your first choice for everything Leicester City. Tune in and join in now.
Right, Chris.
Oh, right there. How are we doing? Got over it yet? I mean, it wasn't as bad. It wasn't as bad as the Spurs result, was it? But it wasn't the best. And I must admit, I'll sit here on my own sometimes, in the corner crying. But I'll sit here and I'll watch the introduction because it reminds me how good we are, or were, I should say. But then I'm thinking, am I turning into an Arsenal fan here? Because we've had a couple of seasons where you could say we punched above our weight. This season, we've struggled. And I don't like to blame injuries, but we have had a horrendous injury crisis. Some of our best players have been out, plus AFCON. I mean, you know, who would have known that, you know, we would have lost most of our back four before the season even kicked off? And who would have known we would have gone out and spent 50 million on a total waste of space like Vestergaard? I just don't know. But then it's only one season. Like I said, and I do look at myself and think, God, you sound like an Arsenal fan. God, save me from myself. This is Leicester Till I Die TV. If you're watching on YouTube, thank you very much. Get over if you're not onto YouTube and give us a little subscribe. It helps the channel out immensely. And smash the likes and like the video as well, because that always helps as well. And if you are listening on catch-up, thank you for joining us. You can listen to the podcast on all the main podcast platforms, including Spotify, Apple iTunes, and Google. Yes, indeed. This is where we are.
Watch us on YouTube. Listen on your favorite podcast platform. Or ask your smart speaker to play the podcast Leicester Till I Die.
Subscribe, like, follow, and join in now.
We're going to bring Russell in. You've seen him before. He's been on the channel. Lovely guy. Yeah, he's a Brighton fan, but he's still lovely. But I just want to read this out, which was when we did the post-match show, of course, you do get fans from other clubs watching it, especially the club you've just played. And if you remember before, I upset a Liverpool fan slightly. I think I called them all Robin Scousing twats or something like that. They accused me of being stereotyping them. If the cap fits, that's all I'll say. But just this is what the Brighton fan said, and I don't want to ask Russell what he thinks of this. All your manager is trying to do with his changes was react to Brighton bringing on Lamptey. He failed, but he's not the first Premier League manager not to be able to counter him, which, fair enough. It was a lucky point for Leicester. Brighton didn't even turn up in the first half, but Leicester still couldn't get past them. Then Leicester got a lucky tap-in. Was it? I don't know. In after the break. But from that point on, Leicester was simply battered by a far superior Brighton team and obviously better tactics. 2 points dropped by Brighton. Leicester didn't deserve anything from today or against Spurs. Now, I'm accepting he's a little bit, he's going to be a little bit biased, as I am towards Leicester. But let's see what Russ thinks of this. This is the opposition review.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the main event of the evening. 60 minutes of football fun and banter with Chris and Leicester Till I Die TV. Are you ready? Ready? Let's get ready to rumble.
Good evening, Russ. How the devil are you, sir?
Oh, good evening. I am very well, thank you, sir. How are you doing?
Well, yeah, I've been better, but yeah. As I said in that introduction, I am worried that I'm beginning to feel like sort of we should be up there because we have been up there, which is very much sort of the Arsenal view. And you know, you'll know you're enjoying your best season for many a season at the moment. But it does, when you have good season, it does raise the expectations, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. And this division, it's very easy. You can go on a run. You can be higher than normal. We've done that once or twice and then slip back. This one, we've managed to get a load of draws in a row, which has actually left us more or less in the same position after an initial drop-off from the very higher positions we're in. Expectations go through the roof. We had Tony Bloom, our chairman, was quoted, "What's your next ambition?" This is a couple of years ago, and he was saying top 10. That's what we've got to aim for. Established now. Obviously, we've got to make sure we survive year on year. That's always a thing for anyone outside the top few. But there isn't within that an ambition to do something else, and that is to get top 10, which is a realistic ambition for us. I think size of club as good as any in terms of being able to get in the top half. You know, in terms of fan base, we're talking similar sizes to yourselves, to Wolves. You could say Southampton, those kind of, you know, a lot of clubs, roughly the similar sort of fan base. Yeah. Obviously, you guys have got a bit more history of recent times as well, which adds an extra element and probably a better squad still from when you did. But for us, top 10 is doable. And you've seen year on year that a team will randomly drop out, Everton this year being one example of that. And obviously, you guys have had a bit of a strange season. I know 100% the injuries have made a difference to you lot. And I think expectations can go up. And as soon as Tony Bloom said top 10, for some people, that's sort of almost taken as a given, thinking, right, okay, that's what we're going to do. And then when we're having a bit of a slide at the beginning of that period after we said it, we're struggling to keep away from the relegation zone, you're thinking, wow, this is all going wrong. And you start to get some people, and we're talking smaller numbers, but some people are always idiots, aren't they, at any club in terms of fan bases. There's always some fools who just go completely carried away.
We have those at the moment. There's a little bit of a anti-Rogers swell developing.
It's just a lull, isn't it? Just temporary lull.
It is. I kind of get, and I think most of it comes at the end of a game. You know, and, you know, we looked at that. We changed tactics. We went from back four to back five and to counteract you. And we just ended up throwing it away, really. But I do understand what they feel. But, you know, you've got to go a couple of days after your game and you've taken your blue tinted glasses off and you've sat there and you've got to think, well, all right, you know, remember where we were. And I know a lot of fans say, well, you can't always say that, you know. You know, Brighton will say, well, remember when we didn't have a ground and we were down there. And we'll say, remember when we were in the third tier and we went bust and what have you. But you have a couple of good seasons. But I think this season, people are still underestimating Brighton. You know, we went there. We said at the weekend, like, oh, you know, we should easily win this. But you've got a best of away record than Man City.
Yeah. We've only lost one game away from home, yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
And that was Villa, and that was the new manager bounce game. And also, it's only because we were going for the win that they caught us on the break with the Watkins goal. And then, obviously, again, same thing happened straight after. But that was unusual for us even then. I didn't feel that should have been a win. That should have been a 0-0 that game.
Yeah.
An entertaining 0-0 was the way I described it as I walked out with us having lost 2-0. But our away record absolutely has been brilliant. And I agree with you. I think we have been underestimated, underrated by some. It's weird because people are big Graham Potter up to the point where some people are saying, is he overrating? Are they overrating him? But at the same time, the team somehow is being underestimated. I don't know how that's happening at the same time.
It's weird because we get a lot of... and I'll come on to Terry says no glasses tonight then, Russ.
Well spotted. I've got them with me.
It's a bit worried. I think he's stalking you, is Terry. I'll come on to his...
I hope he's not going to mention this cold sore I'm recovering from.
No, he's sat there and he's got you on super large on his telly and on super HD and everything's showing up.
Don't do it, Terry. Don't do it.
I get this a lot. They say, especially from people that say, well, let's get rid of Rodgers. Rodgers is going to go. And it's funny because when he was being linked with teams at the start of the season, the Man Uniteds and even Barcelona and places like that, we're not letting him go. He's not going there. And now you're some of the same people are saying, yeah, it's time for him to go. He's taking us as far as he can. But you've got to have a bit of reality in your life. And I think, you know, like I say, this season you've come from nowhere. Wolves are doing better than I thought they would do because I thought they'd struggle after Nuno went. But Spurs and Arsenal have both come back as well. And you've still got West Ham. So where last season you had just Leicester and West Ham, this season you've got, as a Spurs, Arsenal, yourselves, Wolves, all vying for that position that was only us and West Ham going for last season. But what I struggle with Brighton is it is the Potter hype, to be honest with you. Because, like, what has he won? You know, he's this brilliant manager who, as far as I can see, and I'm no disrespect to him, but, you know, come back and tell me he's brilliant, he'll be the next England manager when he's achieved something in England. You know what I mean?
Yeah, this is the paradox, isn't it? Because he was at Östersunds and then he was with Swansea for a short period and he's been with us. And I think he's done a fantastic job in each of those roles. Yeah. I think we can all agree on that in terms of doing better than... Yeah, he's made them better than when he came in each case. Swansea, in a short period of time, with really big constrictions on budget and losing players and all sorts. Östersunds, obviously, a miracle story for a smaller club, getting to Europe and having that brilliant run. For us, what he's done, I think, is a great achievement because he's taken it on when a lot of people were saying, oh, careful what you wish for, when Houghton was sacked, which I do think was the right timing for that, actually. But people were saying, careful what you wish for. But he's taken on the team and we've not slipped at all in positions. And he's transformed the way we play back to a more footballing style that we've been used to before in lower divisions. And to do that at this level, when the stakes are so high and when the margins for error are so small, I think it's been superb. And we play an expansive game. What he's also done is brought in the peripheral squad members. This is what Chris Hughton didn't really do, is having a wider squad available to him who can fit to the level that he wants, which is this footballing style, attacking play. And so you've got peripheral players who wouldn't have been probably having much more than a very small bit part role in cups, who are now able to contribute in random games and do quite well. I think he's brilliant. However, yeah, he's not won anything yet, but I think that's because of the jobs he's been given. You know, Östersunds, he was never going to win the European Cup there. He's got promotions on his CV. Winning the title in that country would have been a very tough call because they're not a big club. Swansea, obviously, the circumstances were difficult and it was only for a year. And with Brighton, I mean, you can't really do any more at the moment. We've got a bottom six or seven budget. We're playing brilliant football, and he's not. All you can do is potentially win a cup, unless you're going to change clubs and get one of the big jobs, one of the really big jobs. And eventually, I think he will get off of that because I think he'll continue to do good things, improving all the time for himself and for Brighton until he moves on. Everton, the job discussion about Everton, he's not going to go to Everton. At the moment, that is not an appealing job. I mean, in the future,
definitely
it will be,
not. Definitely
not at the moment. Yeah. He's building something here, and it's about the whole setup is brilliant. Tony Bloom, the owner and chairman, Paul Barber, who is not only CEO but actually vice chairman as well. He was given that title a couple of years ago. We've got Dan Ashworth, who obviously Newcastle have approached, but he as our technical director, and right the way through the club, the whole core is not only very well organised and very good at their jobs, but it's a very happy environment. And I think Graham Potter does recognise, he did say, why would I go anywhere else at the moment? This is as good a setup as you could possibly have. We've got one of the best training grounds in Europe. We've got a brilliant stadium now. Yes, it's not the biggest, and we're not the biggest club. Those are the only things you can say against it. Other than that, everything's just right. And it's going to take him time to get to the point where he wins a trophy, unless he happens to do well enough to win an FA Cup or a League Cup.
Well, you never know. I mean,
the lottery of it is. It's odds against, isn't it? Yeah, I know.
We've been there. Mike, good evening. How are you, sir? Potter to glory, told you, Chris. Mike, Man United fan, but he's a big Graham Potter fan as well. Like I say, I'm prepared to say that, you know, he's doing better than I thought. But all this has been, you know, he should take over from Southgate and all this. I just think it's a bit premature when he's not won anything. Terry says here, I wouldn't be at all surprised if Rodgers negotiated to go to Manchester United at the end of the season. I don't think he will do. I think Man United want a bigger manager than him. I think if Man United had come to Leicester and said, we want Brendan, they wouldn't have to wait till the end of the season. I think they'd have paid up the compensation and got him. I think they're eyeing up a bigger manager at Man United than Rodgers. David, good evening. The difficulty I have is finding the balance between the fair criticism of his performance and tactics and acknowledgement that injuries have really hurt us and we expect too much from the team. That sums it up spectacularly, David. It is exactly right. But I want to go back, Russell, if I can, to the Brighton fan on YouTube. Was it a lucky point for us? I mean, you know, it was a very tight game, and we'll look at the stats later. It was very, very close. And if you'd had your shooting boots on, who knows? But at the end of the day, you didn't take your chances, and we took our chance first.
Yeah, I mean, this is where the glasses do come on. Let's have a look at the stats while we're talking. Yeah, I mean, I don't agree with the Brighton fan completely there that you've quoted. I mean, lucky in the sense that the momentum was with us near the end and we might have snatched it. So in that sense, there was some of the national media guys and our commentators on our local one were saying that if anyone's going to win it now, it'll be us. And at that stage,
That's probably a fair assessment, to be honest with
you. But the overall balance of the game, I was unable to watch it live. I've watched it back since in its entirety, thanks to good old Sky with their replays. But at the time, I was listening on the commentary for BBC Sussex, and they were saying, essentially, it sounded like it was a bit of a scrappy first half, which I do, having seen it, I would agree with. Yeah. Leicester had the better of that half, definitely, I think, and obviously got the goal just after after the second half started. And at that stage, I would say I don't think we were unlucky to be behind. I think it was just one of those fairly close games. Leicester were edging it, then they got the goal. No complaints there. What I do think is that we're improving at scoring. We are getting more goals than we were in the famous XG peak that we had last season. But we are missing. What we've done is we've scored goals from all around the team a lot more. But in this particular game, and one or two other games I could mention recently, our shooting's been woeful. And in this game, you had Alexis McAllister, who I've always been a big fan of, and who is now really coming into his own. He's a cracking player. You'll see in his corners are great, for example. He needs, and I think he will improve, his shooting from distance. He's one of those players where we could pluck the extra goals here and there along the season. His shooting was terrible in that game. He had two shots that went nowhere near the top of the stand, let alone the goal. and we had Modo, who had obviously that cracking player again, who I really rate, and I thought had a good game, very good game. But he had his shot. I mean, it was his weak foot, but he had that shot where he just kind of spooned it, where he's trying to volley it with his left foot, which was one of the chances near the end. And that went up into orbit. I think that's still up there somewhere.
I can tell you, we're waiting for that to come down.
If we'd have scored one of those, then obviously.
I think we got very nervous at the end when you got the goal. And Danny Welbeck, I can't stand him. And that's nothing personal. It's just he always scores against us, which is why I can't stand him. He did for Arsenal. I think he did for United. And he does for you as well. I just, you know, Why? Just give us a break, Danny, please. But, you know, we did get nervous towards the end, because once you got that goal back, we're thinking like, oh, God, are we going to have another Tottenham Hotspur? And I don't I don't mind losing to Tottenham Hotspur, because they're almost like our bogey team, if you like. And it's almost a given that we will lose to Tottenham Hotspur. We had this with Arsenal a few seasons ago. We couldn't beat Arsenal. I didn't think we'd beat Arsenal for about 6 years or something like that. Ridiculous. And it's the same with Tottenham at the moment, but it was the way in which we lost it. You know, it was the 94th, 95th, 96th minute when we were conceding goals two straight after each other. Bit of naivety there, but that's bound to, I think, when you got your goal, plenty of the Leicester players were just thinking, oh no, not again.
It's understandable, isn't it? When you've just had that bad experience literally a few days earlier. And also bearing in mind our record, I mean, the goal we did score was late, but our record with late goals is insane. And it's to do with the conditioning, the physical and mental strength of the team, the way Graham has built them up. This is part of the credit I give to him is that the fact that they are really there for the full match. And we've scored so many late goals. Quite a few of them have been equalisers in one or draws. I mean, that's something like the sixth or seventh one. It's ridiculous. But obviously, we've been capable of scoring two late goals. We came from behind to beat Burnley, and the late goal there was a winner. And we there's other games the same. And we there was a very good chance that the Leicester fans had every good reason to be worrying about the possibility of another goal going in, because we are in the habit of doing that.
Yeah, and as I said there, and we touched on it earlier. You know, you are. That you have got the best away record, and you know you have got a certain section of fans, and you will look at these games and you'll go on paper at the start of the season. I always do. I always used to do it as a kid, and I still do it now, thinking, well, we could win that one. We might only get a draw there. No, that's Man City away. We're going to lose that one and go through it. And I think, with no disrespect, after the couple of seasons we had and the couple of seasons you had, that first game, I think we thought we're going to, you know, I'd have had us down, this is Brighton, we're going to win, with all respect. And I think the way that you played that first one, and then looking how you've gone on for the rest of the season, I don't think you've been out of the top 10. And
that's right. Know, I think briefly over, with the matter of the order of games one weekend aside. Yeah, that's right.
But we couldn't look at this and go, oh, it's only Brighton. No, it's only Brighton who've got the best away record in the Premier League.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, actually, with the home game, I have to say I can't disagree with you, because our home record over the last couple of years is not great, actually. With a lot of draws, but not anywhere near enough wins, really. I mean, a lot of that relates obviously to last season, but obviously this season, when you came to play us, and in the start of this season, on that basis, there's every reason to think this one's winnable, because Everton beat us this season, for goodness sake. That was their only purple patch. City beat us, which is obviously no surprise. And who was the other team? Oh, Wolves. Wolves beat us. But that was a game, that was the one we tried to get cancelled. But of course, they said no, because we're not one of the top six. It was a scruffy game and we were very weak. But we've had players out all season at some point. We've had some of our best talent has been out at every single stage. We've had Lamptey at the beginning of the season and Webster together at one point. Then we had Webster back and Dunk's gone out, and we've had Lamptey in, but we've then lost, you know, Bissouma for a bit, and now he's off at AFCON along with Mwepu, who would have been the good backup. I know this is almost not a patch on what you guys have had, but we've had to weigh our way through a few problems as well along the way, which is why I was so endeared to Thomas Tuchel's post-match comments in both games against us, where on both occasions we've got the one-all draw. And he was complaining about his schedule and his squad. You know, he had a Champions League winning squad. He brought on, I think, his three subs that came on at once late in the game at the Amex cost more than our entire starting 11. Some of them have been rested. And you think, well, a little bit of grace and magnanimity wouldn't go amiss here.
Wouldn't go amiss. But it's true. Yeah. And, like, I mean, I mean, it's silly now. I mean, you know, if I bring the table up here, he says, if he gets the right mouse, add this in. I mean, that wasn't really a point. Wasn't really much use to either of us. But you know, we're sat on 26, and you know, I'm not going to, you know, last year we were up in third. It was ridiculous last year, but we've got 26 points, sat in 10th, a place behind you. We've got two games on you, and I know, you know, you soon have the points on the board than games in the hand, but the table, it's just so mixed up because everybody's on different games. I mean, Burnley, they've got about four games on Norwich. It's ridiculous. Yeah. And I honestly think, because I thought this season was the season that we get back to normality as much as Premier League football is ever normal. But we haven't. I mean, you know, look at Southampton. You know, they've got two draws off Man City. You know, I said, I couldn't see Man City dropping many points between now and the end of the season for Liverpool or Chelsea to catch them. Southampton go up to their place and get a one. Or in fact, have the audacity to take the lead. And it is, anybody can beat anybody on their day this season.
Yeah, Chris, you were saying about, you know, looking through the fixtures at the beginning of a season and saying, we could get a point here, we could win this. How often does it never really works out that way anyway, does it?
No. So only football was played on paper, eh?
Yeah. I mean, that Liverpool title-winning season, Watford beat them 3-0, didn't they?
Yes.
How did
yep.
that happen?
Yes. That's what we love. I mean, you know, yes, we know it's always going to be the same top three. No disrespect to Rich, who's in from Rich Sports. Great Man United channel if you want to follow anything Man United, Rich Sports TV. He knows what Manchester's going through at the moment. But you've got the Man City, Liverpool, Chelsea. And unfortunately, it is kind of boring because it's always going to be them three swapping places. So I prefer to watch the bottom of the table because that's more exciting. But like I say, you know, I like it for that, the West Ham are up there and giving it a go. Because we're not this season. I want to see these sort of smaller teams, and no disrespect, because I count us in that still, you know, do well and create a bit of an upset.
Could you see Brighton doing what West Ham did this year, which is to sustain that position in the top four or five for longer than we did do, and do what West Ham did? I know they've dropped off a bit and then come back, but is that feasible the way we're going at the moment?
To be honest with you, I don't see why not. You know, why couldn't you? Why couldn't you? No, if you'd have said two seasons ago, do you know what, Chris? Leicester are going to be in the top four all season for two seasons and just lose out on the last day. And I'd have gone, yeah, all right, on your bike, you know, go and wobble your head somewhere. So I could say, why not? And this season, it is open, you know. I mean, if you look at the table, Man United... Once you get past, like I say, those first three, Man United, I mean, Rich said we were predictable with a 1-1 draw. You know, they're predictably unpredictable, Man United. So you don't know what's happening with them. West Ham, they're kind of there or thereabouts. But if they get a couple of injuries, they're struggling. Arsenal, you never know. I mean, you know, they have a win and all the fans are going, yeah, you know, Arteta for England sort of thing. And you know, they lose one, Arteta out. So you never know what's going to happen with Arsenal. I mean, you know, look at the way they played against Forest, you know. Tottenham, yeah, Conte's had been unbeaten since he came over. But, you know, to lose three times in a couple of weeks to the same club is a bit unforgivable. And then you've got Wolves, you've got yourselves, you've got Villa. I'd even stick Villa in there. There's no reason. And I say, as much as I sort of climb onto the Graham Potter bandwagon that he's sort of, you know, this super tact, he's the new Pep or anything. But at the end of the day, he's doing something right at the moment. And if he is as good as he seems to be, he may get you into Europe, you know. And I think... You are very much like us. I mean, if you say, let's say you finish seventh, and that will put you in the Europa Conference. Now, I would imagine, as a Brighton fan, you'd be quite happy with that. Where the Arsenal fans are sort of saying, oh, we don't want to be in the conference. That's below us. And it's like, you're not in anything this season, buds. Again, wobble your head. So there's no reason why you can't finish in that seventh place or even higher. If you just make some of those draws into wins.
Yeah, it's always possible, isn't it? And you're right, we would definitely be delighted. Unlike you guys, we've not had any European campaign, apart from some friendlies, we've not had European action ever.
Yes.
If we'd have won that cup final in 83, it would have been different. But there we go. But
is that the one with the guy with the headband with the blood? Yes.
He was missing for the first game. Came back for the other match, and we thought we'd miss him in the first game. We didn't, and the second game we got thrashed 4-0 by Man United. I mean, so for us, we take it at the moment, even though there is a worry with that, of course, because our squad, although we've got a strong squad and we've got lots of players out on loan who are coming through, sort of elements of a smaller scale version of what Chelsea are doing, with a lot of players developing in Championship level and doing really well. Mm. I still think it was going to be a big challenge if we did get into the Europa Conference spot or higher to manage the squad actually over that period, because that would be tough, especially if you carry on having these kind of COVID interruptions that are still dragging themselves out. However, we take it because it'll be a one. I don't think we go down as a result of the extra demands, and I would take it all day long at the moment.
I mean, look at West Ham. Look at us last season. We were in Europe and we still finished fifth again. So the conference is played on the same day as the Europe. What I don't agree with is I agree with Mike's comment there. Yeah, Arsenal fans are deluded, definitely. What I don't agree with is if you fail at one cup, you shouldn't be able to drop down into the one below it.
I agree with that.
Yeah, you know, West Ham, and they will admit it, speak to West Ham fans, they totally agree that they've got a good group this season. We had a good group last season, and we got, you know, we did get through it eventually. And in the Champions League when we were in it, we had a very good, easy group then. This year, it was the group of death. And I mean, on that last day, everybody at some point was going through to the next round. But the way it ended, you know, we dropped out. But I don't agree with that. I mean, Man United did it this season before. Sorry, Rich and Mike. But, you know, you nearly won the Europa League. And I don't agree with that. You know, you're getting rewarded for failure. And I'm happy we're still in Europe. I don't agree with it, if that makes sense.
I think it cheapens the competition, doesn't it? Because you've got, it's this lot, but then, oh, no, it's not. It's this lot as well. I just don't like that sort of format. It's a bit like playoffs where someone's won a title and then they've got to go into a playoff to win the title.
Rugby union, don't they? Yes.
Yeah.
The one thing Leicester used to be really good at, we were the Manchester City of rugby union a few years ago. We haven't for a few years, but you'd come top and then you'd have to go into a playoff, like you say, to see who wins it. Well, we finished top, you know. That's it. But no, I see no reason why you couldn't. And, you know, maybe that's when we start to see how good Graham Potter is, and then he will deserve the credit that he gets, you know. And I think, just to get back to that Brighton fan, what you were saying about, you know, you battered us in the second half. I mean, when you look at the stats here, and I know stats don't tell you the full story all the time, and possession, I ignore possession because, you know, we won the league with about 25% possession every match. But shots, we had 15, you had 14. Shots on target, 5 each. Corners, we had 4, you had 5. I mean, to me, that says, you know, neither team took their chances. You know, to have, for a Premier League team, whether it's yourselves or us, to have 15 or 14 shots and only get 5 of those on target is not... You would more than that. Hello?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, sorry. I thought you'd frozen for a minute then. But you would.
Something went.
I mean, you know, you look at that and you're thinking, you know, any team worth the salt should be at least 14 shots. You should be getting most of those on target.
Yeah. And that's the same stats I was just looking at. I mean, possession-wise, we were almost every game, I think including Man City last season, we dominated the possession. As you said, that tells you something about the style of play, maybe, but it doesn't tell you about the nitty-gritty of the game. And as you said, all of the other stats are, well, they're as good as dead on, aren't they? Completely dead straight. Yeah. And that tells you that nobody battered anybody there, that's for sure. Yeah. So that Brighton fan, you always get people on online. I don't know where you got that one from, but you know, social media.
He actually replied to my post-match video on YouTube.
Oh, right. Okay.
So
okay.
He can say what he wants because he's increased my watch time. So, go on and quit. But no, you know, he's entitled to his, you know, his thought. It's like, you know, when we lost to Liverpool and in the Carabao Cup and we were ahead and they equalised and it went to penalties, we got knocked out. And a Liverpool fan was surprised that I was upset. What the hell? I'm not going to come on and go, well done, Liverpool. Well done. Yeah, great. You know, it's the that. How did you think your team played? Because, I mean, the good news for us is that James Justin is back. And I know it's a cliche, but, you know, 387 games, I think it is, or something, but certainly 11 months that he hasn't played for us properly. It's like having a new signing back, as much as that is a cliche. But Alan, who does my match stats as soon as he leaves the ground, he gave the manager four for changing the tactics. You know, why the best form of attack for defence for me is attack. You know, once we took Daka off, we kind of lost that a little bit. And, you know, we're trying to hold on to a 1-0. You can't hold on to a 1-0. It's too risky. And he only gave the team a five. But how pleased were you with your team performance?
Relatively pleased. I think part of the reason why you say about the hanging on to the 1-0s is because we play a high line and we really do defend from the front. And we do it pretty effectively. We won a lot of balls in this game and all the games this season, really. I don't think we used it effectively enough. Often enough in this particular match. I think there was some sloppy passing, which we don't normally have, which is a bit uncharacteristic. And as I've already mentioned about the shooting from range was not great. But overall, if you take those elements out, I'm pretty pleased because, again, we were playing a normal game and we were taking the game to you. And the fact that we certainly weren't second best in the game, always happy with that against a quality side. And I know you guys have got some people out, but you're still a quality team regardless. You know, there's no doubt about that. So overall, I'm reasonably happy with it. We could have played better. We have played better this season, both games against Chelsea, the Arsenal game where we dominated but just couldn't score. And I would say the Palace game as well, second game against them. Our old friends, and there's some other examples I could give. So I think we've played better, but I think it was a reasonably good performance. I'm particularly pleased with some of the players that have come back into it. So Grosch hasn't been having a great season, to be honest. He's always been slow. It's never been his thing, but his deliveries from set pieces and from just crosses in general are always a good quality, and he hasn't had that this season. And I thought He did okay. Alzate's been out for so long. He's a young lad who we signed from Leyton Orient. He's Colombian parentage, born and brought up here. And he came through the latter part of our youth academy and then on into the first team. And he started pretty comfortably, looking composed, very good on the ball. Obviously still raw, making mistakes, but generally pretty good. Then he had COVID for, I think, pretty much long COVID for a while. Then he had a couple of injury issues. He's only just come back in the last couple of games, and he absolutely bossed it in the defensive mid position against Chelsea. And I thought he had another good game in this match. Him and Modder in midfield, I think, were the two things I'm probably the most pleased from the game. But I was happy with everything apart from some of the finishing.
Yeah, but I was just pleased to see one of our long-term injuries back. You know, it's been hard. And we do criticise Vestergaard, quite rightly, and a lot of the times, you know. I think Craig sums him up best. He's 6'7" when he stood on the ground, and he's 6'2" when he jumps. He's absolutely...
That sounds like Dan Burns' description from
offence. But he's come into a back four that's not really been the same for more than two games at a time. So, you know, when you're not playing regularly with the same players, you know, you put a ball because, you know, player A would be there, but you've got player D next to you and he has no idea what you're doing. So I kind of get it. We've only kept, I think, 2-3 clean sheets this season, and that really sums up our back four.
That's,
and you can't blame the goalkeeper,
you know. It's not like you.
It's not, but like you say, when you come to think who we've got out, we've got Wes Morgan and Christian Fuchs both retired. James Justin, like I say, has been out 11 months. Fofana's been out since the start of the season because that Spanish git broke his leg in the friendly.
Yeah, that you know was what, horrible,
you know,
wasn't it?
Yeah, do you know what friendlies are, Spain? Castagna has been in and out the squad, and, you know, Pierre has been in and out the squad.
Soyuncu's been off form a bit, hasn't he?
Soyuncu has been really, yeah. He had a bad Euros with Turkey. Yeah. And I never thought I'd say this, but I was really glad when Amati came back from AFCON early. And that last year, we were saying the same about him as we were about Vestergaard. But it has been a bad form. Of course, when players come back, just James Justin is very good, but they don't come back as 100% the same as the player that was there before they got injured. Yeah. Madison, it took him a while to get his mojo back, if you like, you know.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say a quick hello to Niall Kane. Niall, how the devil are you, sir? Watch out for Niall. He's doing a quiz. You remember our quizzes, Russell.
But lower we've got mid-table in the end, was it for me? I don't know.
I can't. I think you were something mid-table like safety. I think you were.
Yeah.
But Niall, he's going to do one, but he's doing a different one because we've already got a Man United fan on. But he is doing this tomorrow at 7 o'clock. He's taking on Brad, and basically we have got four sections that the questions are on. Who are you? Peep show, snog, marry, avoid, and 69. Now, I'm not going to say anything about what those topics relate to, but they are all football, so don't worry. We're not a porn quiz or anything like that with the last section. But catch Niall tomorrow at 7 o'clock. So where, and thanks for coming on as always, Russell, where do you see Brighton finishing up this season?
This season, I think we're just going to probably stay quite consistently at the same sort of position in the table. Yeah. I would probably just say 10th actually at the moment.
Yeah.
Just slip maybe somewhere, somebody have a run maybe that we won't be able to override. I think we could finish 9th where we are now. Best bet would probably be 8th, I would say. But I think we'll finish 10th.
And if but it's a little still bit below you. That,
I still don't mind. You know.
No, for Brighton, and I don't mean this to sound disrespectful, but it is baby steps for any club, isn't
yeah.
it? You know,
oh, yeah.
And I often think it was great that we won the Premier League, but sometimes I think, did we do it too soon? And it's never, I mean, in some ways, it's never surely, too soon.
You know what I mean? Yeah, I know what you mean, though. Yeah.
Trying to keep up that momentum. So,
yeah.
You know, I mean, Newcastle have come out and said, yeah, you've got all this money now, but we're not going to win the title within the next 2 years at least, sort of thing. So I think for Brighton, yeah, if you finish top 10 this season, because where did you finish last season? It was about 14th, was it, or 13th?
I think it was 14th or 15th in the end. It was still not where we should. It was two or three teams. We had Newcastle, who looked pants every time we saw them play. Same with Palace. And they both finished above us somehow. Just think, how have they done that? They just plucked out results here.
Yeah, Newcastle did it by beating us 4-2. The buggers.
Yeah.
Yeah. But finishing 10th, you know, 8th, 9th, 10th is the first step for you. And a good
that would be a marked improvement. We'd
yeah.
be happy with
and
that.
Then, and I suppose the question is, with everybody raving about Graham Potter, if you can keep hold of him.
Yeah.
And I sometimes think, I mean, I know it's hard to turn down these jobs because, you know, how often do you get offered, say, a Man United, or a big Chelsea, it's a big club like that. So it is hard to say no. But sometimes I think managers are better off staying where they are.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. It's a gamble, isn't it? I mean, sometimes you stick and things go wrong and then you wish you'd gone. Other times you jump ship and things don't work out there and then you can't get another job as good as the one you had in the first place. It can go either way. But I do think Graham with us, definitely it's got longevity. It's going to carry on growing the longer he stays with us. And I think he'd be happy to stay with us for a number of years if nothing ridiculously exciting comes along elsewhere. I think with some clubs, there's a right time to leave. And I don't think we're anywhere near that between the two of us at the moment, between the club and the fans and the manager. You might have heard this booing fuss that happened after we drew with, I think it was with Leeds or Newcastle, I think it was with Leeds. Mm-hmm. And that was borne out, just it was a small number of people, more disgruntlement with, or frustration more than disgruntlement, actually. And it was a very small number, but because it was on that side of the pitch, and he heard it, they saw him mouthing, oh, I can't believe they're booing. And it got blown out of all proportion. And you do wonder then if we then carried on not winning, could that escalate some out of nowhere? And you think, oh, please don't say that's going to happen, because it'd be ridiculous. I didn't for 1 minute think it would, but you start to think, don't you? But
I don't know. Our fans got booed off on Sunday after our match.
Yeah, I heard. Yeah. And I mean, it's, as I said, it's a temporary lull. You've got circumstances that explain why you're not doing as well this year, the injuries and so on.
Yeah.
And the disruption with COVID and everything else. I think as long as you're happy with him, there's no fundamental issues that you can see with Brendan Rodgers, which are warning signs of the future. As long as things are generally on the right path, I'd say stick with him as well, because I think we've both got great managers, to be honest.
I agree. As much as I criticise him, you know, sometimes you have to bite the bullet and have a bad season or have a bad run. Terry, talking about things being bad, our defender Vestergaard has got COVID. He's got rigor mortis. Oh, that... that deserves that, I'm sorry. But what Terry did say earlier, and what I kind of like this about Brighton, the same as Leicester here, the thing is that what he likes about Brighton is, although they're close to London, they still got that family club feel.
Yes, yeah, I think we have. I think we have got that. Yeah, you're right. It's, I mean, the games when we play the London sides, it's always got a sort of like a general feel of a derby game, because it's, you know, the doubt in London, doubt in Brighton. It's kind of one of those things, goes back way back in time. But in terms of the local area, it's the club for the whole of Sussex, really. Aside from Crawley, who've come into the league in the last few years at a lower level, it's the only professional and Sussex club, and it's the only Sussex club historically that's been in the top divisions. And so it has had that wider appeal. You get Sussex in general comes. I'm from Worthing originally, which is down the coast, about 11 miles away from Brighton. But that is the local team. You know, you can go and watch Worthing as well. In fact, I did do that on Saturday. But you know, it's those people will go to Brighton as well.
Yes,
and you get families from all over coming as well. Yeah, I would say so. And
I would be remiss of me if I didn't ask, because a lot of people have said, ask him. And I have asked you this before, but I've got to admit, I completely forgotten the rivalry between you and Crystal Palace. Is it simply the fact that you've just said there's no? I'm trying to remember what you said to me, with the fact that you wasn't any Crawley at the time and Palace is the nearest one to you?
Yeah, it's strange. It is factually the case that, yes, Palace is actually the nearest club to Brighton, notwithstanding Crawley's recent arrival on the scene. And obviously we're not in the same divisions as them anyway. So Palace is the nearest one to us. Obviously that doesn't work the other way around. But I think it's something like 3 miles nearer than Portsmouth, which is the only other one going the other direction.
Yeah.
And obviously Portsmouth are much closer to Southampton, and with long historical issues there between the cities, they really hate each other.
We
have a healthy rivalry with the Hampshire sides, particularly Portsmouth, which gets a bit spicy, particularly in the past. But Palace is the only one. And what it is with Palace, it goes back to, I think there were some issues in the mid-70s, but culminating in 1976, when Mullery was our manager and Venables was their manager, and they hated each other. They were rivals at club and international level. They both wanted the captaincy for England. Then they got into management at the same time as young managers, and there were some very spicy encounters. We had a cup match which went to a second replay, if you remember those. Chris,
oh yes, I do. I've had a few of them.
So it went to a neutral venue, which was Stamford Bridge, and there was a penalty that got retaken, which should never have been retaken, and of course we missed the retake, having scored the original. And it all kicked off. There was all sorts of aggro, which there had been a lot through those years anyway. We were in the same divisions all the time as well. And Mullery threw a handful of cash. Some fans threw a hot coffee over him near the dugouts. And then he threw some cash on the floor and said, your fans aren't worth that. And there was major widespread violence that day and on subsequent occasions all through the 70s and 80s. I remember going to the games from probably for about 1981, I think, because I was about 10 years old from then. managed to get to a couple of away games, and you started to realise these two really hate each other.
Yes,
it's a quirky one, but it is one of those ones that, you know, you've got it with your local clubs as well, local rivals, so to speak. You've got crossover areas. You're working in areas between the two areas, in offices and whatever else, you know, shops, wherever else people are working, and you've got that banter going on. So places like Crawley, Gatwick, bits of South London, you've got lots of Brighton and Palace fans exchanging banter all the time in workplaces and all that sort of stuff, living areas. You know, a lot of people from Brighton live in London, and in particular South London, and lots of Palace fans live down on the coast as well. Quite a few in Eastbourne for some bizarre reason, but anyway. So it is
the retirement capital of the country, that is.
But it's keenly felt, and I mean, we hate each other. In, I mean, you know, I'm not going to start going around punching people, but some idiots do that. But yeah, we absolutely hate them. I cannot stand them being above us in the table. So this season has been fantastic.
Yeah, I am sure. Ross, thank you so much for coming on. I don't thank you at all for getting an equaliser.
I suppose not.
I guess we've ended the season. When you come to think, we've played each other three times. You've won one, we've won one, and it's a draw. So we've balanced it out there. That's fair.
Yeah.
But it does say on there, but just tell everybody where they can find and listen to you.
So it's I don't do anything in video wise, YouTube or anything like that. So it's just a podcast. We put out either one or two a week, depending on what kind of stuff's going on at the time. It's just called the Brighton Rock Podcast. It's available on all the usual typical platforms, you know, your Spotify's, iTunes, and various other of the usual typical sites. I'm also on Twitter at Brighton Rock Pod. So you can check us out on there. Please do follow us, get the numbers up. It all helps, doesn't it? I can follow back and so on. We've been going for a couple of years. It's been good fun. It's usually me and a co-host, Peter, and we get some regular guest contributors on there as well. So we normally put one out as a match review, and there'll either be some kind of feature, special guest, or a preview, or a mixture of those things on an extra episode. So, and we've been doing some non-league specials, which is why I went to Worthing at the weekend, which was a brilliant day out, 1,300 there, and it's great fun watching the low league stuff as well.
When I moved down, because as you know, I live in Poole in Dorset, and when I moved down here, I actually started to go and watch Poole Town because I could see them live, and I actually worked for them as a steward for quite a while, and it was lovely. It is, you know, grassroots football. I can remember we had Charlie Austin just before we moved to Swindon. And really went places, but unfortunately, then Leicester started to do well, and we started to sort of do well, and obviously won the Premier League. And it was, well, do I stop in and watch Leicester, or do I go and watch Poole? And I'm sorry, Leicester pulled me, but it's nice to go and support your local clubs as well. But Russell, thanks very much, mate. All the best for the rest of the season, and you know, like I say, Europe. You never know. Good luck. I think you could probably do it.
Yeah. Never know. We might still both be in there next season. That would be quite nice, wouldn't it?
I'll take that now.
So bye.
All the best, mate. Take care. Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Thanks to Russ there for coming on. And Brighton Rock Podcast. He does some great things on there. Do get out and listen to him. Mike, Watford are a disgrace. I don't know, we could have seen that coming, couldn't we? Really? I mean, I'm going to go into it in more detail. I've got a show coming up in 56 minutes. So we're going to be talking about that. We're going to be looking at the weekend's soccer action and news. And so pop on and see us then. And we're going to have a chat about Watford then. But it was a weird decision. Let's just say that right from the start, when he didn't do what he couldn't keep Fulham up, could he? So. David, good evening, sir. How the devil are you? Managing to just slip in at the end there. And Maisie, good evening, Maisie. How the devil are you? I will see you in 56 minutes, Daisy, for the second show. We've got something to talk about now, Mr. Ranieri. Should he give up? Should he give up now? And he's starting to look a bit foolish, is he? I think he just might be. Thanks for joining us, Maisie. As always, it's a pleasure to see you. I'll see you later. Well, I'll see you in just under an hour. Thanks, everybody, for watching on YouTube. And thank you if you are listening on Spotify, Apple iTunes, Google, or your favorite podcast platform. We are all over the place. I'll see you in an hour.
Thanks for watching Leicester Till I Die. This is Chris saying goodbye and see you next time. That's all,
it's all over. It is now.